জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি, গোপী জন বল্লভ গিরিবর গারি, গোপী জন বল্লভ গিরিবর গারি, যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যমুনা তীরবন চারি, যমুনা তীরবন চারি, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি, জন বল্লভ গিরিবর গারি, জয় গোপী জন বল্লভ গিরিবর গারি, যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যমুনা তীরবন চারি, যমুনা তীরবন চারি, হরে কৃষ্ণ রে কৃষ্ণ 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 রে হরে, হরে রাম হরে রাম 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 রে হরে, হরে কৃষ্ণ হরে কৃষ্ণ 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 রে হরে, হরে রাম হরে রাম 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 হরে হরে, হরে কৃষ্ণ 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 রে হরে, হরে রাম হরে রাম 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 রে হরে, হরে কৃষ্ণ হরে কৃষ্ণ 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 হরে হরে, হরে রাম হরে রাম 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 রে হরে, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So continuing with the Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 4, chapter 13, verse number 1. Description of the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj. Sutta uvacha Nishamya kosha ravino pavarnitam Dhruvasya vaikunta padadirohanam Prarudha bhavo bhagavatya dokshaje Prashtum punastam vidurak prachakrame Sutta uvacha Nishamya kosharavinopavarnitam Dhruvasya vaikunta padadirohanam Prarudha bhavo bhagavatya dokshaje Prashtum punastam vidurak prachakrame Nishamya kosharavinopavarnitam Dhruvasya vaikunta padadirohanam Prarudha bhavo bhagavatya dokshaje Prashtum punastam vidurak prachakrame lady. Chakrame Punastam vidurakha chakrame. Suta uvacha. Suta Goswami said, Nishamya, after hearing Kosha Ravina by the sage Maitreya, Upavarnitam, described Dhruvasya of Maharaja Dhruva, Vaikuntapada, to the abode of Vishnu. Adiroha nam, ascent. Prarudha, increased. Bhavaha, devotional emotion. And that's what I'm going to focus on in the class. Devotional emotion. Bhagavati, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Adhokshaje, who is beyond the reach of direct perception. Prashtum, to inquire. Punaha, again. Tam, unto Maitreya. Vidura. Prachakrame, attempted. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Suta Goswami, continuing to speak to all the rishis, headed by Shonaka, said, after hearing Maitreya Rishi describe Dhruva Maharaja's ascent to Lord Vishnu's abode, Vidura became very much enlightened in devotional emotion, and he inquired from Maitreya as follows. I'll kindly repeat. Suta Goswami, continuing to speak to all the rishis, headed by Shonaka, said, after hearing Maitreya Rishi describe Dhruva Maharaja's ascent to Lord Vishnu's abode, Vidura became very much enlightened in devotional emotion, and he inquired from Maitreya as follows. Purport. On the record now. As evidenced in the topics between Vidura and Maitreya, the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the devotees are so fascinating that neither the devotee who is describing them nor the devotee who is hearing is at all fatigued by the inquiries and answers. Transcendental subject matter is so nice that no one becomes tired of hearing or speaking. Others, who are not devotees, may think, quote, how can people devote so much time simply to talks of God, unquote. But devotees are never satisfied or satiated in hearing and speaking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead or about his devotees. The more they hear and talk, the more they become enthusiastic to hear. The chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is simply the repetition of three words, Hare, Krishna, and Rama. But still, devotees can go on chanting this Hare Krishna mantra 24 hours a day without feeling fatigued. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Agyanati Manandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Kshakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto his lotus feet. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak here among all these so super sincere devotees. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, somewhere, I forget exactly where, but there's a purport in which Srila Prabhupada describes, quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a structure or a method of giving class. And so that's what I'll follow in this little lecture. And the idea is to hone in on a particular theme, then speak about it a little bit from the logical point of view, then give some scriptural evidence and verses, some examples, and then relate it to us as practicing devotees, and then relate it to the outside modern society in which we live. If there's time, bring it on to some other tangent or some sort of related topic and expand on that, and then just wrap it up. It's a great way to give lectures. I mean, the system really works. Tomorrow's Ayendra Prabhu's Vyasa Puja. And here in the purport, Prabhupada does mention 24 hours a day, kirtan. So we'll speak a little bit about 24-hour kirtan and hopefully 24-hour kirtan here in Sridhar Mayapur. But to begin and to get on the topic of, as I mentioned, devotional emotions. So funny, welcome to West Bengal, you print. This is the printed version of my class notes. There's nothing on it. The ink is like unreadable. Anyway, I'm sorry? Yeah, of Ayendra Prabhu. Ayendra. 24-hour kirtan. So, the point is this. As Vidura became very much enlightened in devotional emotion by hearing about Maharaj Dhruva's pastimes, the principle that we can draw out of this is simple but yet fundamental, and that is that by hearing Krishna Katha, by the very nature of Krishna Katha, we awaken, we connect or reconnect with devotional emotion, with spiritual emotions. Logically, it makes sense. We're spirit souls. We're not this physical body. We exist on a totally different plane of existence altogether from matter. And God or Krishna, being non-different from his pastimes, from glorification of himself, from anything related to him directly, is on that same absolute platform. So therefore, logically, when we as souls connect to Krishna through his pastimes, which are non-different from hearing about his pastimes, one naturally awakens one's dormant spiritual consciousness. There's a few nice verses in this connection. The one that we all know is the one that talks about the saffron dust particles. Maharaj Prithu, in the fourth canto, he mentions how narrations of Krishna, narrations of glorifications of Sri Krishna are imbued or are compared to saffron particles that literally like traverse the ether through the voices of self-realized souls. And therefore when they enter into the ear, that sweet flavor of saffron has an effect on the heart. So glorifications of God, of Krishna, are of a totally different nature altogether. And that's why we have these two famous verses, 11 and 12 of the fifth canto, where on the one hand, non-devotional scriptures are described as being places of pilgrimage for crows, right? Nayat bachas chitrapadam harir rasho jagat pavitram pragrinita karhichit tadvayasam tirtamu shanti manasayat natraham sanira mantyu shikshaya. And those words that do not describe the glories of the Supreme Lord are considered by saintly persons to be unto like a place of pilgrimage for crows. In other words, refuse, place for pilgrimage for crows, it's garbage. But on the other hand, right? Tadvagvi sargo janataga viplavo yasmin pratishloka badavatyapi namanyantasya yashoni kitangani yad shrimbanti gayanti grinanti sadava. Those who are from the generation when that book called The Nectar of Book Distribution was out may remember that's like the first verse that's quoted on the inside cover. On the other hand, that literature which glorifies the Supreme Lord is a different creation altogether. It's a different creation, it's a whole different category altogether. And it's meant to bring about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. So there's a clear contrast between non-devotional topics and Krishna Katha. Currently, I'm a student at the University of California in Santa Barbara, and I can tell you from experience that anything but the bhakti literatures is just so dry. It's dry, dry, there's no juice, there's no ambrosia, there's no nectar there. So in the entire creation, the thing that really has any potency to arouse spiritual emotions is Krishna Katha. Is Krishna Katha. And by constantly hearing with patience, month after month, year after year, hopefully not life after life, because we want to go back to Godhead in this life, and Lord Chaitanya will make it up at the time of death for whatever discrepancy may be there. Slowly but surely, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunoi Shavanadi Shuddha Chitte Karaye Udoy. By hearing and chanting about Krishna, that natural love for Krishna or these spiritual devotional emotions are reawakened in the heart. This is the secret. Everyone knows this. It's like an open secret. And that's what we're doing. That's what we come to Mayapur Dham for. That's what we go to Namahat programs for. That's what we... I mean, our whole life, regardless of ashram or varna or race or gender, centers around hearing and chanting about Krishna. And even though we may be quite neophytes, and the taste or the spiritual devotional emotions may not be very much pronounced, still we're getting some taste, we're getting some experience, and that should propel us forward with hope that as we just keep going with this process, we'll experience more and more taste and reawaken our dormant love, our devotional emotions in relationship to Krishna. But this is the beauty of personalism. And when there's two, then one can love and one can be loved. And there can be an exchange. And that's why Chaitanya Vaishnavism, the theology of Chaitanya Vaishnavism, really is the best thing out there on the market of theologies. And it's just a question of time before the mainstream modern world really grasps its superior characteristic or nature. Now, in terms of examples about this, now we've gone logic versus examples. Well, we're in Sridhar Mayapur, and therefore the paradigmatic example of someone who relished devotional emotion by hearing about Krishna is none other than Lord Chaitanya himself. Right. All the leelas of Lord Chaitanya, practically speaking, are all based on hearing and chanting and experiencing intense devotional emotion, the extreme of which are the Gambira leela, where just by hearing some songs of Krishna, Lord Chaitanya would rub his face against the wall and bleed, and his associates would stop him. But it starts right here. It starts right here in Mayapur, in the early pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Yesterday was Srivas Thakur's appearance day. So in Srivas Angam, Lord Chaitanya would have these nocturnal kirtans that would go on hour and hour and hour. And then what was the result of that? It was just extreme devotional emotion, right? Now, are we experiencing that? Should we lament that we're not? Yes. And, you know, should we keep trying? Yes. But let's just focus on Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Besides I took a few examples of Lord Chaitanya in this connection. So the first one is Shiva Sangam, and the other one, for example, is the pastime between Lord Chaitanya and King Prataparudra. Where King Prataparudra chanted this verse from the 10th canto, Tavakatam Vitam Tapta Jivanam Kavibiri Iritam Kalma Shapaham Shavanamangalam Srimadatatam Bhubigrinanti Bhuridajana. For those who haven't noticed, by the way, I mean, I don't know Sanskrit at all, but there's a, like, in terms of poetry, you see how each line starts, right? Tavakatam Vitam Tapta Jivanam Kaviviriditam Kalma Shapaham Shavanamangalam Srimadatatam Hubiprinatiji Bhuridajana. And for those who don't know the translation, this is the 10th canto, and it's glorifying Krishna saying, My Lord, the nectar of your words and the descriptions of your activities are the life and soul of those who are always aggrieved in this material world. These narrations are transmitted by exalted personalities, and they eradicate all sinful reactions. Whoever hears these narrations attains all good fortune. These narrations are broadcast all over the world. Interesting, this is in 5,000 years ago, and the gopis are saying, your glories are broadcast all over the world. Bhakti Charumar, in this connection, always kind of, when he quotes this verse, he says, oh, that's a verse that points to Srila Prabhupada. These narrations are broadcast all over the world and are filled with spiritual power. Those who spread the message of Godhead are certainly the most munificent welfare workers. The word is Buddha. Certainly the most munificent welfare workers. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes it. When Lord Chaitanya heard this verse, he just got up and screamed, Buddha, Buddha, you, speaking to King Prataparudra, you are the most merciful, you are the most munificent. And then he would say, go on reciting. And then he told King Prataparudra, you have given me invaluable jewels, gems. And the only thing I can do is embrace you. Another time, in the gardens, in some garden in Jagannath Puri, Sarup Damodar similarly chanted a song that evoked spiritual devotional emotion. And that was a song by the gopis in from the Gita Govinda, which goes, Rasi harimi va vihitya vilasam smarati mano mama krita parihasam. Just these two lines, which means, here in the arena of the rasa dance, I remember Krishna, who is always fond of joking and performing pastimes. Here in the arena of the rasa dance, I remember Krishna, who is always fond of joking and performing pastimes. This is a song that Srimati Radharani sings. So hearing that, Lord Chaitanya immediately got up and started dancing in ecstasy, it's described. And I don't know if you are expert in the technicalities of devotional emotions. If anyone knows what Bhavodaya is, or Bhava Sandhi and Bhava Shabbalaya, you can clarify. But it's described all these different types of devotional emotions erupted in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and began fighting with each other. And at one point, they were all manifest. whatever that may mean. So much so that Swarup Damodar stopped. He stopped singing. He stopped singing the song, seeing how Lord Chaitanya was... he started fearing for Lord Chaitanya's condition. At which time Lord Chaitanya said, go on, go on. And then Swarup Damodar would not. So we can just imagine the beautiful tension that's all happening on a transcendental platform. And the intense eagerness of Lord Chaitanya to hear, so much so that those reciting don't want to recite in fear that Lord Chaitanya's condition may be in peril. And when was the last time someone was reading Krishna book to us and we went into a fit and they had to stop the reading? That reminds me, in New Vrindavan, I think there's a story in a Krishna book at night, right? On Janmashtami day, there was a reading of the Krishna book in the temple room, and all the devotees were there, and Prabhupada was standing real erect, and from the description, and hour after hour, the Krishna book was being recited, and Prabhupada was just like erect, and hearing every pastime, and obviously relishing being right there. And then in the temple room, all the heads were like this, falling asleep. I mean, Prabhupada said, okay, that's enough, right? But hey, that's just our condition, and so what? I mean, we're as sincere as we can, and we go on. And the taste will come. And in any case, even if when the taste comes, it's not like we start thinking, hey, I've got some taste now for Krishna Katha. The whole mood of a devotee is, I don't have any taste. Durdaiva midrishami ha janina nuragaha. I mean, the Mahabhagavat thinks I'm not a devotee, everyone else is a devotee but me. So what? So what's the point is? The point is, a devotee never really shows off his or her attachment to Krishna. For example, there's a pastime of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, in which he was giving a lecture, and then all of a sudden, he's just stopped. And he got off the Vyasasana and ran to his room. Locked the door. And devotees went there and they could hear Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur behind the door weeping, sobbing. So devotees are naturally humbled about their realization. There's a verse by Rupa Goswami that encapsulates the mood of Lord Chaitanya. So if you can see, my realizations are not worth much, but the verses I've collected here are gems. So if you're not falling asleep, if you can just hear the references I'm giving, they're full of nectar. This is one of the verses that Rupa Goswami writes in glorification of Lord Chaitanya, and specifically in this concept of going into spiritual ecstasy just by hearing and chanting about Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the topmost of all devotees. Sometimes, while walking on the beach, he would see a beautiful garden nearby and mistake it for the forest of Vrindavan. Thus, he would be completely overwhelmed by ecstatic love of Krishna and began to chant the holy name and dance. His tongue worked incessantly as he chanted, "Krishna, Krishna." Will he again become visible before the path of my eyes? And the examples are endless. Jiva Goswami would faint again and again when Nityananda Prabhu would take him on Navadvip Dham Parikrama. Just by hearing Nityananda Prabhu say, "Here, this pastime happened and that pastime happened," Jiva would just faint. Similarly, we have the favorite example of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. An interesting point about Pundarik Vidyanidhi that he didn't have a stereotyped appearance, some stereotyped uniform. As a matter of fact, Gadadhar Pandit had doubts, what kind of devotee is this, right? But just when, who was it? I think Mukunda, someone recited the verse from the Bhagavad somewhere where Putana is described as having obtained a position of Krishna's mother in spite of having given her breast full of poison to Krishna. When Pundarik Vidyanidhi heard this, it's described, he just went crazy. He was ripping his clothes apart. His feet were like, and just like, similar to an epileptic fit. And it's described 10 men had to hold him down, right? Just by hearing Krishna Katha. If any of you were here during Srila Prabhupada's pastimes, we read that Prabhupada once here in Mayapur during Jai Radha Madhava, just sort of went into samadhi, if we can say, and then stopped chanting. And just like in another world. And then some devotees started chanting the Maha Mantra, and then Prabhupada came back to external consciousness. So as I mentioned earlier, we just have to have patience and continue the process of hearing and chanting. But this is where I want to start speaking, for example, about the 24-hour kirtan in Mayapur and other issues like that. In order for us to get to the stage of getting some attachment from hearing, we got to do it right, and we got to do it. So for example, in terms of doing it, Rajendra Nandan Prabhu is a great example. Here in Mayapur, he spends all day hearing and chanting. And it was really fun. For about a week in a row during the festival, several devotees would go to his house, to his apartment in the afternoon, and would just hear Chaitanya Bhagavat. And for 2 hours straight, sharing the book, just reading it together with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's purports. And you came out of there feeling so refreshed, so Krishna conscious, so Krishna consciously fresh. And that's the result. So we may not be in ecstasy yet, but we're definitely getting purified. And not just purified, we feel, we want to be happy in Krishna consciousness. And one thing is just, survival mode. Okay, I've got my rounds to chant. Let's follow the four regs if we can. Another thing is to really feel blissful in Krishna consciousness. And the bliss, the bliss comes from associating with devotees and chanting Hare Krishna and hearing Krishna's glories. There's no secret. The more one gets close to the process of hearing and chanting, the more bliss one feels. The more one gets, away from hearing and chanting, the less bliss one feels. And again, I can speak from experience. Due to destiny, I'm in Santa Barbara alone. Girarsami is about 20 minutes away, but for the first time in my life, I have to do all my morning program alone, chant my rounds alone. There's one family or two living there, but in terms of a daily program, it's nothing what I've experienced for the last, let's say, 15, 18 years, where I'm in a constant context of hearing and chanting. And it's just not fun. It's just not fun. But when you come in association of devotees and you hear and chant, it's great. But it's got to be done properly. So for example, since we're talking about kirtan and 24 hours, our process is shravanam kirtanam. When the lead singer is leading, I'm getting down to a specific example which is close to my heart in Mayapur. When the devotee, and it's apropos, it's in line with the verse, so we're not getting off subject, and it's a small issue. But there, as you may know, there's two different styles of kirtans basically going on the planet. We can categorize them as such. One is where the amplification of the voice is constantly there on the call and the response. And another is when there's just one voice being amplified during the call, and then during the response, there's no amplified voices, and one can actually hear oneself singing the response. Attentive kirtanam. Shravanam kirtanam, not shravanam shravanam. So in my humble opinion, and many devotees, when there's a kirtan, when two amplified voices are constantly there, the process of shravanam kirtanam is lost. Shravanam goes on when the lead singer is singing, but then when it's your turn to respond, you're supposed to hear yourself singing. You can't do it because some other Prabhu is singing in the mic and their voice is amplified. So that's why we're trying, effort is there to try to regulate that, especially in places like India, especially places like Mayapur. It's not an issue in the West. And it's not an issue in Chalpatis, but it's an issue in places like Mayapur and in the temples in India, and it's an issue that will have to be addressed. And similarly, 24-hour kirtan, wouldn't it be great if there could be a 24-hour kirtan here in Mayapur, just like there is one and there was one when Ayendra Prabhu was around in Vrindavan? I imagine the possibilities that Mayapur offers compared to Vrindavan. And the 24-hour kirtan in Vrindavan created a huge social network of teenagers, adults, old people, brahmacharis, renunciates. Everyone came together around the 24-hour kirtan phenomenon. Extremely healthy and enlivening. And people from all, that's why Vrindavan was so famous, and it is so famous. So imagine if that can happen here. If we can have a 24-hour kirtan in the temple room in front of Panchatattva, where humble, dedicated, serious devotees do proper hearing and chanting of Hare Krishna mantra, you'd have thousands and thousands and thousands of devotees from all over the planet coming to Mayapur to hear and chant, to get absorbed in hearing and chanting. So just so you know, those things are in the work. Gopal Prabhu, who's in charge of the 24-hour kirtan in Vrindavan, is moving here, settling here, and when he settles here in a few years, we hope and pray that GBCs will approve of a Hare Krishna 24-hour kirtan program in the Mayapur temple. Wouldn't that be great? Prabhus, yes? So, there's only about 10 minutes left. In terms of our presenting this process of Krishna consciousness to people who are not aware of it, we just have to be intelligent. And we have to make it appealing. In other words, the process of hearing and chanting, the process of bhakti yoga, is a scientific process that's meant for everyone on the planet. Whether African, whether Latin American, whether Mongolian, whether Gujarati, whether Tamil, whether whatever, Australian. And our responsibility as devotees from our respective countries is to really make it a point, really meditate on how to present Krishna consciousness in a way that's not alienating, but rather appealing to the local culture in which we live. And in one country versus another, the external details may differ. And we have to be willing to understand that and accept that. In this connection, I'd like to read a quick passage from the letter that His Holiness Ridayananda Goswami wrote to all the ISKCON devotees at the beginning of this year as a Happy New Year sort of wish. And he made a point which I think is extremely important for us today in ISKCON. So, if I may. He asks, is ISKCON destined to be basically an Indian movement with branches in foreign countries? Or is it meant to be a truly international society that establishes the Yuga Dharma as a dominant spiritual process throughout the world? Personally, I believe that ISKCON can fulfill Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya's vision only as a truly international society that presents Krishna consciousness as a non-sectarian, non-ethnic spiritual science. I learned this from Srila Prabhupada himself. Thus, it is the responsibility of those of us who serve Srila Prabhupada in the West to do all we can to reignite the fire of a powerful, relevant movement in our respective countries. So, you know, how can we make Krishna consciousness more relevant than it is today in our respective countries? And this should be, like, at least for me, that's something that, like, really bugs me in the good sense. Because, you know, any devotee would naturally feel like, wow, how come we're not spreading as much? How come we're not, you know, if Krishna consciousness is such a beautiful theology, if worship of a divine couple, Radha Krishna, is really the most incredible, the most developed, the most sophisticated theology on the market out there. And if the process of Krishna consciousness revolving around the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, truly provides genuine spiritual experience, then why are we not more mainstream? And when I say mainstream, I don't mean compromised with the principles. I mean just mainstream, like Prabhupada wanted it to become, a huge, dominant religion in the modern world. Or spiritual science, however you want to put it. Something that everyone knows about and that large majorities of the population practice to a larger or smaller degree. So these are, you know, I think it's a very exciting topic that we could go into. But I don't want to deviate too far from the topic at hand. But and when we all go back to our respective countries, we just have to do what is needful. I have this Kirtan Yoga Club on campus, UCSB. UCSB means University of California, Santa Barbara. So as an insider, I'm able to do legal preaching, which is another issue. Like, you know, how long are we going to do illegal preaching? What's the repercussions of that? For example, we do book distribution a lot in places that are illegal, that are just simply not allowed by the government, technically. Now, you know, in the long run, in terms of gaining the credibility, the trust of the local governments and the people, is it really an intelligent thing to do? Should we, you know, play by the rules of the game in our social, in the context in which we live? Especially in democratic countries, you know, in places where there's no democracy, for example, you know, some heavy-duty Islamic countries, you know, unless you bend the laws and you there's no preaching whatsoever. So in those cases, yeah, you know, but in the cases of democracies where freedom of speech is totally allowed and freedom of religion is totally allowed, speaking of the Middle East, it's interesting how this phenomenon that's happening now in Egypt and Tunisia could be seen as an arrangement of Lord Chaitanya to bring in democracy in those countries. And that's what they're clamoring for. And through democracy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can put his lotus foot in there, into the door. And then, you know, following is the whole process of Krishna consciousness. So we're maybe seeing an unfolding of the prediction of Mahaprabhu, right? Every town and village, including the Muslim countries, through these revolutions by which, you know, democracy is going to become established and through which Krishna consciousness can enter. And that's very exciting. So since we don't have much time, I'll just wrap it up by coming back to the verse of Prithu Prabhu, Prithu Maharaj. What does Prithu Maharaj pray after he describes how the glorifications of Krishna have saffron particles that enter the heart and make spiritual devotions, devotional emotions sprout up? He prays as follows. Please hear. My dear Lord, I therefore do not need any other benediction but the opportunity to hear from the mouth of your pure devotee. So, you Prabhus, Vaishnavis, Vaishnavas, give me the blessings that I can be in situation where I can just hear Krishna Katha, and then, you know, to whatever tiny little extent of ability I have from my karma, be able to engage that in Mahaprabhu's service and make it possible so that other people can also start this process of hearing and chanting. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Perfect.
Last topic that you were discussing, by the way, thank you very much. Nice class.
Thanks,
nice. Nice to be encouraged to hear and chant. On the topic you were discussing, that technically the histories of religious movements becoming dominant forces in human society, and Prabhupada said this, he spoke it to my spiritual master, my spiritual master comments on this particular thing, that the history is always followed by when a religious movement actually gets government backing.
Hmm.
Like, you know, the Buddhists had Ashok, and the Christians were a small sect in the Mideast until they had Constantinople. Once Constantinople got behind
but
the
Christian. In the context of democracies, though, it's a little bit more tricky.
Well, I'm just saying, the thing is until... I'm saying that Prabhupada's said that until we get a strong leader or a democratic government behind the Krishna conscious movement, it's very, very difficult to...
I think what's going to happen first, if I may, before we get like a, you know, one emperor of America, for example, you know, the Krishna conscious emperor of the United States who establishes Krishna consciousness as the one and only religion of the country. What's going to happen is that, I think, Vaishnavas will gradually go into positions of leaderships and show by example and ultimately win over the hearts of people by the experience, the spiritual experience that Krishna consciousness provides. But the other voices will probably still be there, at least for a long time to go. But the way we can compete, at least right now, with other spiritual traditions, is by making sure we're experiencing Krishna consciousness ourselves and providing that taste, that spiritual experience. And kirtan, I mean kirtan, and this is, if I may, my tongue is getting twisted. I wanted to bring this phenomena up, something that's quite encouraging in the United States, and it's called the Bhakti Fest phenomenon. The whole phenomena of how kirtan is becoming increasingly popular on a large scale, even among non-devotees. And particularly there's a festival that takes place now twice a year. Who hasn't heard of it? Called Bhakti Fest. Because I don't want to be preaching to the choir here. Hello? Anyone there? Bhakti Fest is this festival that takes place twice a year in California, in a place called Joshua Tree, where now there's going to be 6,000 people who come from all walks of life, mostly from the yoga community. And you have all these really good kirtan leaders, kirtan singers. Many of, you know, some of them are not full-on Chaitanya Vaishnavas, and the people who come to hear and chant may not have shikas and may not be chanting 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and following the four regulative principles. But they're coming to get a taste of devotional emotions. They're coming to chant Hare Krishna and other Vishnu names by the thousands. And fortunately, we've got our men there and women. Gauravani, Askenian spirits, the Mayapuris, a lot of second generation kids have infiltrated into that scene and are really popular. And in a good sense, they're like, you know, facelifts, you know, women, mostly women, sorry, no offense to women, but mostly it's done by women who have facelifts, you know, because they want to look younger and more beautiful. So in a way, like these young men, these young groups, these young devotees who are in that circle and having tremendous popularity are literally doing a facelift to ISKCON North America. And people are actually starting to really appreciate and really like and find ISKCON and Krishna consciousness a cool, hip, relevant thing. And that's what we want. I mean, think about it. The Avalon Ballroom concert in 1967. 10,000 hippies are there. Now, who organized this concert? The most famous popular bands of the time. Moby Grape, Jefferson Airplane, The Grateful Dead. These are bands which are equivalent to today's, I guess. I'm sorry, I come from America, so if you don't know these people, 50% only of your life is spoiled. Lady Gaga and Justin Timberlake and Eminem and all these like big stars, right? Now imagine it today, if these people got together and say, hey, you know what? Let's do a concert and let's give every single cent of that concert to the local Hare Krishna temple. Now that would be great, but unfortunately, it's probably not going to happen. Because today, for one reason or another, we're just not as relevant, not as popular as we were in 1967. So anyway, coming back to this point. So back to this Bhakti Fest program. Recently at the university where I was, there's a professor, a journalist, who's quite popular in America. He's written many books. And the latest book he wrote, which he was signing at the university, is called American Veda. American Veda, how Eastern spirituality has influenced the American society. And it's a historical account of how much Indian philosophy, Mayavadi and Vaishnava, unfortunately a little bit too much Mayavadi, because there's a lot more Mayavadis who came to the West than Vaishnavas, have influenced American thought and American intellectual life and social life from the time of Henry David Thoreau, Ralph Waldo Emerson, up to today's Bhakti Fest phenomena and Kirtan phenomena. And so he made an interesting point in his talk. He mentioned that this Bhakti Fest is increasing at such a rate. You know, it started about 4 years ago with 500 people, and now there's like 6,000 people. So at this rate, in 10 or 15 years, it's going to be bigger than what Woodstock was in 1967. Now, Woodstock, there's how many people? How many hundreds of thousands? 300,000 people at Woodstock. But they were listening to drugged out, totally non-devotional music. Whereas here, if this phenomenon continues, you'll have 300,000 people chanting Hare Krishna and hearing Krishna Katha and different seminars on topics related to Krishna from Gaudiya Vaishnavas, many of whom are from ISKCON. So the future is very bright. So I just wanted to throw that in because it is very hopeful and we should be happy to be hearing these sort of things. Ganagamipu.
Actually, Prabhu's Giranagari's comment is interesting because Hungary does give a considerable amount of money to the devotees. Hungary does give every year a considerable amount of money to devotees because people can check a box.
Yeah, 1%, right?
They can take a percentage of their tax money and it can go to a charity of their choice. And Hare Krishna devotees were, I think, number two recipients of all the charitable donations in Hungary in the last few years. So there's a broad base in a democracy of people supporting Krishna consciousness. And ultimately, governments are more or less empowered, disempowered today. A lot of people in America have absolutely no confidence in the government, so whether or not there's a president that becomes a devotee or an emperor becomes a devotee, I don't think people are going to pay too much attention. Also, these governments are also on a very localized level. America is successful because it has 50 states, 50 different localities, and they've all banded together federally, but that's another issue. Another point I wanted to compliment you on was this Shravanam Kirtanam point. I know in Mumbai where I was, they tend to have two singers, one chanting and one responding. It's very distracting, and it doesn't give you a chance to think. So I think this could probably be an issue you could take up with the GBC, because it will probably take that kind of action. Thank you very much for a wonderful class.
All right.
Hare Krishna.
Awesome. Okay, we have 2 minutes left. Sikhi Mahiti Prabhu. And thank you for your patience, really, because it's an austerity to hear me.
Well, one quick comment about the two microphones. Actually, sitting in Mayapur, I came one evening and it was full of guests. There were so many people chanting. Even if you didn't have two microphones, you couldn't hear yourself chant. Mm-hmm. So that phenomenon of being too loud to hear yourself chant, what can you do, I guess? Right. But I remember sitting there and there were so many guests chanting, you couldn't hear yourself chant and without the microphone. I just wanted to give a little bit a side comment on the letter from Hridayananda, where it's kind of implying that we're a little bit too Indian, and maybe this is people don't want to be Indian, so they don't want to follow Krishna consciousness. But it's amazing, he himself became a devotee through the Indian process, you know, that he's criticizing, first of all. Really, the point is that it's the purity is the force. We're not trying to present an Indian culture, in a sense. But some of these ideas that are coming up, we used to have those discussions a lot when he was in Atlanta. And I remember telling him, I said, well, why don't you just go to a city where we don't have a temple and show us that it'll work? So
well, you know
I haven't
we
seen
really
that happen
see
yet. I just hear a lot of theory.
But wait, if yeah. I may.
But we did, let me finish. But we did see the old process worked.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it made lots of devotees. So it's just another rebuttal, another side to say we can't dismiss that.
No, it's not at all a question of dismissing at all. But we see things like Devamrita Swami's loft programs, Matsya Avatar Prabhu's program in Italy. Examples are there. Tons of grihasthas are having home programs in their own homes.
Yeah. Okay, where's Hridayananda's program? I don't see his example. Huh? I don't see an example of his success.
No, but
I just hear a lot of this is wrong, that is wrong, don't do this, don't do that, don't be Indian, don't be... It's just a lot of criticism. I don't see him produce anything significant.
It's hard because, you know, he's...
I just want to show a rebuttal. I mean, of course you can't...
You're his godbrother, and he's my, one of my main shikshakus, But I think we can notice in the West, the programs that have appeal to locals, in other words, those who are not Indians, and of course, I mean, the Indian population, we want them to become Krishna conscious, obviously, and the fact that many Indians in the West are coming forward to Krishna consciousness is wonderful. We're all spirit souls. We all want to go get Krishna's shelter, and we want everyone to get Krishna's shelter, whatever body is there. And the point is, though, at least my observation is, those programs that present a sort of a culturally neutral presentation where the essence, which is really hearing and chanting, kirtan, is emphasized. And cultural details are kind of like up to the person. Those programs attract a lot more local-born people. I think that's an undeniable observation.
Well, I don't know. I guess we could debate, but we won't take all the time. I would say you do have to focus. Just like, for instance, I mentioned in that same rebuttal to this article, you don't see a lot of Black Americans coming.
Black Americans.
Yeah. In my opinion is you have to kind of go. Say if I went into the community, I could probably draw a few more out. So it's just a question of targeting, which is nothing wrong with
that. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was a wonderful example.
He targeted professionals at a certain level. He didn't go for maybe, the inner city people, in a sense.